Welcome to All Sides. Larry Flynt has earned a fortune in pornography and a name for himself as a crusader for First Amendment and privacy rights for more than 30 years. Another of his passions, according to the jacket of his new book, is to expose hypocrisy in politics and transform the national political dialogue. To achieve that, he's written a new book. The name of the book is that he co-wrote with historian David Eisenbach is called One Nation Under Sex, How the Private Lives of Presidents, First Ladies, and Their Lovers Changed the Course of American History. He's with us today from New York. Welcome to the show, Larry Flynt.
Glad to be here.
Why is it important for us to know about the sex lives of our political leaders, by the way, dating back all the way to Benjamin Franklin?
Wow. Well, you know, I've been having politics for about 30 years, and I wanted to know if the sex scandals that we were having today, if they existed prior in our history. So we started doing some research, and we found out it was going on with the founding fathers as well. And it was just as prevalent as today, and the press was covering them just as aggressively as we are today.
But, you know, the talk about Benjamin Franklin and Alexander Hamilton and all the rest of them, that isn't new information. What makes it important to us? Why should we understand and know about those
Well, take Jefferson, for example. You know, no one wanted to believe that this man who drafted the Declaration of Independence, that he could father six children by a slave girl, Sally Hemings. And we were never able to confirm that until 1998, approximately 200 years later, when DNA was available. So I think it is important because historians look at these people as though they were made from granite and stone, and they're really not. They were flesh and blood, just like us, with the same foibles. And I don't think it's important that you gloss over history, that you give it to people the way it is.
And you make the point many times, repeatedly, that not only did it happen in all of these different cases, or is it strongly suspected that it happened, but it might have changed the course of history because of the philandering.
Oh yes, there's no doubt about it. You know, when Eleanor Roosevelt found out President Roosevelt was having an affair with her social secretary. You know, from that day forward, she never ever slept with him again. And even though they were married, they had separate lives in the White House. And there was several women that was helping Roosevelt during the Depression and World War II. And I mean, he was crippled from polio, and he needed the strength that he got from them to help get us through those amazing years. And I don't think without him that he would have been able to. So I believe history was definitely changed there. And another good example is Woodrow Wilson. You know, he had a stroke, and his wife, and along with the help of the White House doctor, covered it up for 3 months and hid it from Congress while there was an important vote pending on Versailles Treaty, the League of Nations, which would have allowed America to join the League of Nations. And that was defeated all because of Wilson's wife, Edith. So there's many, many instances like that in the book where you see that that policy is being affected by the relationships involved.
My guest is Larry Flynt. He's co-author of a new book. It's called One Nation Under Sex, How the Private Lives of Presidents, First Ladies, and Their Lovers Changed the Course of American History. If you'd like to speak with Mr. Flynt, have a question for him or a comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. What inspired you to write the book now As you noted toward the end of the book, we average about a sex scandal with a politician about every 6 months now.
My publisher was wanting me to write a book, based on the last 35 years, and that just wasn't appealing to me. So when we got to talking about putting everything in a historic context, I found it a great deal more appealing. And I enjoyed writing the book a great deal, too. As soon as I knew I was going to write the book, I teamed up with my friend David Eisenbach, who's a history professor at Columbia.
Right.
And we did the book together and was able to get it out a lot faster than if I did it on my own.
I should say a little bit about David Eisenbach. He's an award-winning historian. He teaches American political history at Columbia University. He was the creator and host of the two-hour History Channel special, The Beltway Unbuckled, about how presidential sex has shaped American history. So this is something he knows something about. What surprised you the most in the course of your research and preparing and writing the book?
There were many stories, but I was really shocked to find out that we had a gay president in 1850, that was James Buchanan. I wasn't prepared for that.
Do you feel absolutely comfortable with that, that's true?
Oh, yes. He was single and he had a relationship with Senator Rufus King for 32 years, and they lived together in the White House, and everybody made fun of him, had nicknames for him. It was very common knowledge. The thing that I found the most interesting about that, though, is you would think if someone was gay, they would identify with other people that were oppressed, but not Buchanan. He was a staunch segregationist and pro-slavery all the way, and I just thought that was really strange that himself being homosexual, but at the same time not having any empathy towards the slaves.
You make a pretty strong point about the relationship between the press and politicians and how that ebbed and flowed, or in terms of uncovering sexual exploits, it ebbed and flowed over the years. Back in the day of the founding days of the nation, it was pretty common to try to out somebody when they were fooling around if there was political gain to be made.
Yeah, that happened in the early years of the founding of the nation, and then after that the press started viewing the presidency as something they had to protect, and they never really went after anything about the private lives of the presidency. And this continued all the way up until after the Cold War, until after the Kennedy administration, and then the press, that all changed with them, with Kennedy and Clinton and others that were involved in very sex scandals.
And so what the press is like today and the relationship between the press today, technology and all the other differences that history's wrought besides, is a lot more like it was in the early days as far as how the exposés on politicians.
Absolutely. Like in the early days, like Jefferson and Alexander Hamilton were going after each other. Hamilton was the first congressional person to be investigated on a sex scandal. And, of course, Jefferson had this affair with Sally Hemings, and it was a very notorious time with the press. Now, today, it's almost back to where it was then. If if you're a politician and you're trying to hide things, you're not, in this climate, you're just not going to be able to get away with it.
Another interesting thing is the hypocrisy. You know, no one was more critical of Alexander Hamilton than, you know, well, I suppose John Adams, and well, he was pure as the driven snow, but then that Thomas Jefferson, and yet he had his own issues, and that continues to this day.
Yeah, and, you know, I often get accused of just wanting to expose these people's sex life, but that's not it at all. It's the hypocrisy involved, because I see hypocrisy as being the biggest threat to democracy that exists.
Why is that?
Well, you have people living double lives and having a host of mistresses, and at the same time they're spending government money and they're casting their vote for you on the floor of the House and the Senate. You know, it's just... if you've got someone that is totally unscrupulous, I don't think he's going to have your best interest at stake.
Yeah, you say that that if you could, that Americans need to adopt one simple rule: don't trust anyone who dedicates his or her life to stomping out other people's consensual sexual activities.
I say that over again.
You said that Americans need to adopt one simple rule: don't trust anyone who dedicates his or her life to stomping out other people's consensual sexual activities.
That's very true.
My guest is Larry Flint. He is he co-wrote a book called One Nation Under Sex: How the Private Lives of Presidents, First Ladies, and Their Lovers Changed the Course of American History. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. Post your question or comment there. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today. Later this morning at 11:20, it's an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's White House news conference. The president is expected to talk about deficit negotiations and the impending deadline to extend the nation's debt ceiling. That's an NPR News special beginning at 11:20 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra. The sixth season of Jazzoo kicks off Friday, July 8th with Red, White, and Blues featuring Kevin McGuire at the Columbus Zoo. Gates open at 6:30 with showtime at 8. Tickets and more details at jazzartsgroup.org.
73 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunny skies today, a beautiful day with a high of 81. Clear skies tonight, a low of 60 degrees. Sunny and a high of 85 for Thursday. Clear skies Thursday night, a low of 62. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is Larry Flint. Co-wrote a new book, One Nation Under Sex: How the Private Lives of Presidents, First Ladies, and Their Lovers Changed the Course of American History. Questions or comments, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. The George Herbert Walker Bush case is an interesting one in that his political career sort of straddled those two eras, from the protectionist era when the press protected the presidents into the expose era. He didn't really understand, or he didn't seem to understand, the press's treatment of the presidential candidates in 1992. And I remember in 1988 when it first popped that he allegedly had an affair with a longtime aide. It made something of a splash back then. I was following Barbara Bush. I was traveling with her on the campaign trail, but by 92, no one could even travel with her on the campaign trail.
Well, it wasn't alleged. The affair actually happened. She was one of Bush's associates with the CIA, and Fitzgerald was her name. And Bush did a good job on shutting that down. He just basically, for the most part, refused to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But it's been pretty well documented in history. Since he was defeated by Bill Clinton, there was really no need to go back and rehash it again. But it happened.
But in unlike some other examples, she's never said she never said and has never said that it was true, and neither has he. I mean, it's just conjecture, really.
Yeah, but there was just too much evidence there, and any time any member of the press tried to bring it up, he just immediately shut it down. He wouldn't discuss it.
Right.
He handled that very well.
Well, I was going to ask you. I mean, he did handle it very differently than it seems like a lot of politicians do these days, which is they want to. Well, in Anthony Weiner's case, wants to make up an explanation, or just outright lie about it. In Bill Clinton's case, what's it been over history? Is the lying and making up excuses more common nowadays, or has that been sort of the case all along?
No, it's always the cover up that gets everybody. You know, that's been true all down history. You know, it's really not a big deal in the beginning, but when they start covering it up, it becomes a real deal.
You asked the question about why would brilliant men and women with grand ambitions and historic plans risk a lifetime of hard work for an hour of pleasure? And then you talk about the psychological backdrop of that. You talk about the enzyme explanation, the chemical explanation. But what about the hypocrisy of it? What about those out there that risk all of that to, you know, for you know, a short-term sexual exploit or even a long-term one, and risk everything, but then also criticize others and judge others? What's that about?
Politicians are a different animals in terms of their libido. One thing that I've found that they all have in common is they got a huge ego, and this ego needs to be fed by their sexual conquest. And you see these traits available in almost every politician that you get to know.
One thing I learned a lot, but was everyone knew that Benjamin Franklin was the ladies' man, and that was nothing new. But very specifically, his relationship with a madam, I think it's pronounced Brionne, actually did change the course of history. That this was a very specific example of his dalliances being very, probably pretty, on purpose to change the course of history.
Franklin was tapped by the Continental Congress to be ambassador to France. It was important that the United States get financial support and arms support from France. We could have never, ever won the Revolutionary War without the help of the French, and we virtually bankrupted that country. But it was Ben Franklin that went there and seduced all the right ladies, and got into the right places, and become very much a part, you know, of the French government.
And back then it wasn't such a big deal. The husbands didn't mind so much. By seducing the wives, he got to the husbands, and they didn't mind. They were fine with it. Therefore, more amenable to his requests.
The French mores was much different then, and even more different today. It's the average person who hasn't spent time in France is not really aware of that, but it's very different.
How much has this book irritated people? What are you hearing back? Is there pushback from the devotees of the Roosevelts, the Kennedys? I mean, we could go on and on.
everything is very, very positive. You know, one thing you missed the Kennedys. That's why I grew up in the Kennedy era, you know, that Kennedy mystique and Camelot. It was a great time to be alive, and everybody believed in the country, and it was just a great period in history. And then you see all this stuff uncovered about Kennedy, and it was very reckless and careless. He probably had more affairs than any other president or any two or three presidents put together. And his wife also, both before his assassination and after his assassination, and it was a difficult chapter for me to work on. But the research is there, and it's all available, and it's quite shocking.
How did his affairs change the course of history, per se, besides the fact that he had a lot of them? But how did that change anything and change his governance?
I'll give you one example. He, J. Edgar Hoover, he had information on all the senators and congressmen at that time. And Kennedy was having an affair with a German girl who was thought to be a spy. And this was getting ready to be exposed in 1962 in the Senate. And so Bobby Kennedy and President Kennedy had nobody to turn to but Edgar Hoover.
Edgar Hoover?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he goes and meets with the Senate and lets them know what he's got on everybody else. And so the investigation is shut down. But Hoover wanted something in return, and he wanted to be reappointed as FBI director. And in addition to that, he wanted Kennedy's permission to be able to wiretap Martin Luther King. And that was a pivotal moment, you know, in the civil rights era. But there's just all kinds of things like that in the book, and I think people appreciate the kind of detail that we gave them all, and it's a very comprehensive book.
You've said that you're an advocate for privacy rights, and what do you mean by privacy? Because a lot of people might view the book as an attack on privacy.
What I was referring to is on a much grander scale, like with companies like Facebook and Google. And, the government is just standing by letting all these tech companies just ride roughshod over every American's privacy. And then you've got the Patriot Act, which we all thought Obama would do away with after Bush, but he didn't. And I put privacy right up there with the First Amendment. They're both extremely important issues to the American people.
Abraham Lincoln was a caring, supportive husband to Mary Todd Lincoln, and they were united in their love for their four sons, by any measure, two of whom died before Lincoln was assassinated. What does Lincoln's sexuality tell us about him as a president and as a man? How did that affect our history?
Lincoln had what was known as the dark side, and even he referred to it, and Norris Kearns Goodwin, the historian, wrote about it a lot. And
his depression?
Yeah, the books that she wrote on Lincoln, but no one was able to make the connection between, you know, his sexuality and his bipolar condition. You know, back then there was really not a way to even diagnose it in that period of time in history. But we're not saying what it was about Lincoln's sexuality made him different, but we know that he did sleep with other men. what went on. There's no records to prove that. It's something that took place in Lincoln's life from his days in Illinois to his days in the White House.
Is it fair to subject the historical figures to this kind of scrutiny and this kind of conjecture, in some cases only conjecture, when they're not here to defend themselves, and it's so long ago, no one else really can either?
Well, we would have never did the Lincoln story if we hadn't had the letters between him and a slave owner by the name of Joshua Speed. And, you know, if you read letters between two people, you know immediately what their relationship is, whether it's sexual or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So there was something going on with Lincoln and a relationship that he had with three different young men over the course of his life.
My guest is Larry Flint, publisher of Hustler magazine and also co-author of a new book. It's called One Nation Under Sex, How the Private Lives of Presidents, First Ladies, and Their Lovers Changed the Course of American History. It's co-written with David Eisenbach. He is an American political history professor at Columbia University and creator and host of the two-hour History Channel special, The Beltway Unbuckled. If you have a question or comment for Larry Flint, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You start the story at the very beginning of our nation's history with the bit about the prostitute who set up shop to serve the crew that was working to build the White House. What was the point of that? Because those were workers. They weren't politicians. They were just, they were construction workers.
Because the average American today thinks that history was so much different than it is in our culture today. And that's not true. I mean, sex has always been an important factor, and it's always been there from the time they were constructing the White House or the Congress, and this woman, as you know, opened a brothel right on the grounds of the government house.
It was legal back then, wasn't it? Or not?
No, it wasn't legal.
It was never legal.
They shut her down pretty quickly, but...
You make the assertion in the book that... part of what we struggle with economically today has to do with the hypocrisy, the moral hypocrisy of the past. What's the connection between our economic situation today and these kinds of affairs in the past?
Poverty. Poverty can definitely be affected. Monogamy is affected by poverty. You know, I mean, if people have money and have a lot of discretionary income, their behavior is a lot different than if they don't have it.
We have an email from Charlotte. She says, some commentators have speculated that Joseph Goebbels was a notorious womanizer, was compensating for being short with dark hair, i.e. that he was anything except the Nazi ideal of male beauty. What are American politicians compensating for? John Edwards had it all and more within easy grasp.
Well, as I said in an earlier comment about the traits that all these politicians seem to have, and they need to feed that enormous ego, and it's normally done through their sexual conquest.
What about women politicians? They're still a very small percentage of the overall numbers, but they have gained a lot of prominence at the higher levels of politics, or however you want to describe it.
All those statistics are rising about monogamy in women versus monogamy in men. there's definitely more philanderers out there with women, with men, than it is with women. So I would say you're going to have much less, as more women get involved in politics, you're going to have less sexual scandals.
People are inured to the topic now. It was more interesting to hear, for a lot of people, to hear Representative Wiener make his explanations over the course of several days than it was to learn that he had sent the had tweeted the photographs in the first place. Almost.
That was the question.
It's almost, I wonder, are people more interested in watching them squirm after the fact than they are in the...
Yeah, it's that old adage, just like a train wreck, everybody wants to see it, you know, and there's nothing makes better copy than a good sex story.
One thing about Franklin Roosevelt... a lot of people don't think of him as a womanizer. They think of him as a pretty dedicated person to, in one serious affair with Lucy Mercer, that, as you mentioned earlier, changed his relationship with Eleanor Roosevelt forever. But he also had another relationship, Missy LeHond, I think her name was. And
Missy.
Yeah, Missy. And you make the point, there's been a lot of questions about could he have a sexual relationship, and you said that there's proof that he could now.
Well, there's no evidence for anybody to be able to substantiate whether he could or couldn't. But
there were doctor's reports.
But there was a bond there between him and Missy and him and Lucy, and... whether this was platonic or whether there was a sexual component, I think it's really irrelevant because he gained a lot of strength from those two women, and it's a strength that he needed to get him through the Depression and World War II.
From Twitter, we have a question. They say, I want to hear about Flint's Ohio magazine days in Columbus.
Oh, that's a long time ago.
Good days?
That's a long time ago. I used to publish a monthly in Ohio because of Ohio Magazine.
Happy memories or not?
Oh, yeah. They were happy memories. My memories are very fond of Ohio. It was a great place.
My guest is Larry Flint, author and Hustler magazine publisher. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I guess you can use Twitter, too. You can go to Ann Fisher, WOSU, and Twitter us that way, tweet to us that way, and we'll be glad to take your questions or comments. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
WOSU Public Media's fiscal year ends soon. If you have made a pledge to 89.7 NPR News, please be sure to fulfill your gift by June 30th. Send in your contribution using your return envelope or call our membership department at 614-292-9678. Remember, you've got the power to strengthen and support 89.7 NPR News. Thank you for participating in WOSU Public Media's fiscal year end fundraiser.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with big-time college sports and athletic compliance. That discussion begins at 11. And then later this morning at 11:20, it's an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's White House news conference. The president is expected to talk about deficit negotiations and the impending deadline to extend the nation's debt ceiling. That's an NPR News special beginning at 11:20 this morning on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Ohio Northern University, where a student-centered environment and nationally ranked arts, sciences, and professional programs provide opportunities for students to discover their true north. Special visit day July 29th, onu.edu.
Sunny skies today and a high of 81 degrees. Clear skies tonight, a low of 60. Sunny skies for Thursday and a high of 85. Clear skies Thursday night, a low of 62. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guest is Larry Flint, Hustler magazine publisher and author of a new book with David Eisenbach. The name of the book, One Nation Under Sex, How the Private Lives of Presidents, First Ladies, and Their Lovers Changed the Course of American History. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, if you have a question or comment for Larry Flint. The thesis of your book, Mr. Flint, could you extrapolate that out into other national or internationally as well?
Oh, you mean as far as the theme of the book?
Right.
Well,
is it peculiarly American?
It's just different in a sense. Like, I'd like to see America, we have more of a similar attitude that the Europeans have towards sex. In America, you know, sex is such a knee-jerk reaction, but in Europe, they all know that they're politicians are having affairs. That's why they take the 3-hour lunches, you know. And this has been going on for centuries. So, I mean, because of a puritanical upbringing and the role that the church plays in most people's lives, it's just forbidden.
Let's turn to Columbus more specifically. You are planning to open a store in Clintonville. At the site of at 2761 North High Street in Clintonville, and I was wondering why you picked Clintonville to open a store.
We just looked around for locations, and we liked that particular location.
What makes a good location?
Traffic for one thing, you know, having the right size, the square footage, and you know, the Hustle Hollywood stores that we're opening up, they're basically, you know, adult boutiques, you know, what we sell. All sorts of novelties, lingerie, and anything that's adult, you know.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people in Clintonville that aren't happy about the store. You're used to people not being happy about what you do and what you sell. What is your response to people who are critical of your decision to put a store in Clintonville?
Well, the community is very happy. We have around 20 stores open now nationwide, and, you know, we have to have proper zoning before we go in. We're running a serious business. There's nothing that goes on there that anybody should be disturbed about. It's just you know, people conjure up all sorts of things in their mind, but when the store gets open, they realize there's nothing to be excited about.
Frank in Columbus, you want to talk about the Clintonville store? Welcome to the show. Hi, Frank.
Hi there. Not necessarily the store, but I first of all think Mr. Flint is brilliant. I really enjoy talking or I'm listening to your program, and I'm, to be upfront, from a different point of view, and I look at, like, the words, you know, we're changing history, some people have changed history by their actions, and, you know, when we publish certain things that I think promotes that category, and, you know, we'll have a larger book in the years to come, and I guess I'm curious, Mr. Flint, like, why do you do what you do? Or, I mean, wouldn't it be better when I go to Wikipedia in 30 years to see that there was a major change on June 29th, 2011, where you changed your thought and you want to change history for the good? And what can we do to help prevent all this? Because it's happening everywhere. And if I get involved with pornography, then is my 17-year-old daughter going to have a divorced dad in 3 years from now? I think she will, because my wife will leave me.
So
it's kind of a comment and a question. why are we promoting all this? Isn't there something we can do in society? And I think Mr. Flint could change his history if he'd like, you know.
Okay.
Well, I'm trying to promote more honesty in government. I only have one vote. The other way, we try to create a revolving door and get some of those people out of Washington that don't belong. And it's not easy to achieve, but that's my motivation. And it's always the hypocrisy and nothing other than that.
Always the hypocrisy. Frank, does that answer your question?
Well, in general, I guess I was making a statement maybe more than the question, but I appreciate your program. I enjoy have more discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, Frank. And I think that also what I heard in Frank's question was, would you rather be known for a book like this and making this kind of impression on people about hypocrisy and about how sexual exploits and the hypocrisy of them have changed the course of history versus the pornography business? Larry Flint?
Well, I'm not apologetic when it comes to having published pornography. I think pornography is the most pure form of art that there is. And if people were not as uptight about it as they are, I think we'd be living in a much different type of society. You know, other than the desire for survival, the strongest desire we have is that for sex. So you would think the medium that we know we use to communicate with the most, we would understand it a little bit better. So in essence, I'm really not apologetic for what I do. Some people are offended. I regret that. But, you know, they don't have to buy the merchandise. That's what living in a free country is all about.
Thanks, Frank, for your call. If anyone else wants to has a question or comment for Larry Flint, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Larry Flint, is this your first book? How many books have you written, and are there more on the way?
Now, this is my fourth book.
Okay. And what inspires you next?
I'm toying with another idea. A little premature to talk about it now, but I enjoy writing. I think it's important when you can write a book.
Let's get back to the store. The city is looking at, they say that it's a zoning loophole that allows Hustler Hollywood to open a store in Clintonville, and that they're looking at whether they can close the loophole, that is, but they can't close the store. How do you feel about the fact that people don't want your store in their neighborhood?
Well, that's usually always the case.
So you're used to it.
Because they're really not informed as to what the store is, you know.
Tell us more about what the stores are like.
Well, you think you were in Sex Fifth Avenue, you know. We sell all types of apparel, lingerie, lotions, incense, candles, novelties, you know. We have over 1,000 different items that we sell in our store.
But you can't, what is it, the 51% rule? There can't be more than 51% adult-related, right?
Well, it varies from community to community.
Okay.
But whatever that is, we always abide by the zoning regulations.
And there's a coffee shop? Why a coffee shop?
Pardon?
Why a coffee shop?
Well, I don't think we're going to have coffee in this store. It's a small store, but some of the bigger stores we have a coffee shop in.
Okay, so this is just strictly merchandise.
Yes.
Robert in Pataskala, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment, you were talking earlier about what is and isn't porn, and I've actually had some discussions with friends about this, and what I thought about was when you frame it and you hang it on a wall, or you show it on Showtime, you know, after midnight, it's art. But when you shrink wrap it and you put it on a shelf in an adult bookstore or you put it on a specific website, suddenly it's porn. I think it's all subjective. It's a matter of what the viewer sees in it, because there are, you know, or if you make it black and white, if you make a nude photograph into black and white, it's art.
Larry Flint, response?
Well, I agree totally with what the viewer has to say. You know, Chief Justice Leroy Douglas once said, when asked about obscenity, he said he felt it was like the concept of sin, what might be to one and not to another, and it's best left in the minds of man. And I think everyone can gesture up their own feelings based on their imagination and what they perceive to be pornographic. And they draw conclusions based on that. And people need to get more of the facts, you know, so they don't get so carried away.
Okay. Thanks to Robert in Pataskala. Thanks for that call, Robert. Running out of time, so if you do have a question or comment for Larry Flint, now's your chance. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You said that earlier that you struggled with the Kennedy chapter because you grew up in that time and all the enthusiasm and the optimism. You felt it all and you respected that. Were you ever shocked at what you were writing about when it came to the Kennedys?
Yes, I was. You know, the president, he was always attracted to the stars such as Marlene Dietrich, Angie Dickinson, Marilyn Monroe, people like this. So here you've got the most high-profile man in the world who wants to have an affair with the most high-profile women in the world. I mean, that's a dangerous portion. Right there. I just don't think it was well thought out or conceived, and the president was very careless. And as far as Jackie goes, that was a real downer because the American public thought of her as royalty, you know, and then to find out that she was already having affairs before his assassination, but then afterwards, one of them meeting her brother-in-law, Bobby, you know, that's very disheartening. I mean, it was a difficult period in the book for me to write about.
Solita in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Solita. You're on the air.
Hi, Mr. Flint. You don't know me. I have met you a couple of times. Back when I had just graduated from high school, I worked for you at Hustler Magazine, and my memory is bad, but I think it was on Gay Street, the offices.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. My parents weren't exactly thrilled that I got the job, but it was fun. And then sort of a running theme years later when you were married to Althea, a friend of ours, Dick Stein, was the band at your wedding, and he sort of snuck my parents into the wedding, and Althea was gracious enough to take them through the mansion, and they really enjoyed meeting her and you. And then years later, for the past, maybe 30 years I've worked in film production, I was hired as one of the set decorators on People vs. Larry Flint. And I think you're wonderful. May not agree with everything that you've done. I noticed that the other caller, you know, asked you, wouldn't you rather be remembered for this rather than that? And I think people need to remember that we are all multidimensional, And, you know, you've done many things. You're not just, you know, a one-dimensional person. So I applaud you, and good luck in your new store.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Salita, for the call.
I got to go, please. Okay.
You've got to take off?
Yeah.
Okay. That's Larry Flint. He's author of a new book, One Nation Under Sex, How the Private Lives of Presidents, First Ladies, and Their Lovers Changed the Course of American History. Thanks a lot for joining us, Larry Flint, and thanks for your calls. Coming up at 20 past the hour, we're going to tune in to the press conference with the president about the economy and the debt ceiling. Then coming up in a few minutes, we'll be talking a little bit about compliance in the NCAA regarding Ohio State University and others. So thanks for tuning in now. We'll catch you later. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.